Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.
What's up, everybody? We are back. We are live right here. We are on, as you can see, we are on Facebook, Live right now. We are also on YouTube. So if you are interested in listening to A New Breed, Real Topics, Real Opinions, right here with your boys, I'm Tristan Ducross. On my side, as always, is my partner in crime, Sean Ducross. Tristan, it's been a wild week. We've had a lot of action, but it's not combat sports without something turning somebody up on top, upside down, if you will, and you've got exactly that going on this week.
Isn't that the truth, though? Because the breaking news, well, I want to say kind of like breaking news, but everybody's talking about this new hot topic that's just stirring the pot, and that, my friend, is none other than the intimate sale or not thereof of the UFC.
Yeah, and we've heard rumblings about this for a while, and people say that you shouldn't be surprised of how we are at this point in time when you've got the UFC up for sale. We shouldn't be surprised with that. But the bottom line is that you can be kind of surprised about what is going on with the UFC because of the fact that when you look across the drawing board and you see what's going on with the UFC, is it really for sale? We were just talking about that. Is it really for sale? That's the biggest question I have. Because when you listen to Dana White and what he said on Dan Patrick's show, on Colin Cowherd's show, he doesn't deny it. Reports say that he has denied it. But for me and for what I see, it's not denied. All it is that it's not clear in terms of what is going on with the sale. Here's what we do know, okay? The Fertittas own 81% of the UFC. Dana White owns 9% of the UFC. A group called Flash Entertainment owns 10% of the UFC. That's what we do know. What we do know is Dana White says that, you know what, I'm open to whatever makes this sport grow faster. So for us to try to dissect this, it's going to be very relatively hard. But the one thing that I can say for certain is that at the end of the day, is that if any knowledge and background I have on this is that being in my former full-time job field is that if you give your financials to an investment group, you are up for sale. Unfortunately, that's just the reality of the situation. So when you look at it and you go, okay, they gave all their financials to the investment group. From what I know, they're up for sale. But the drawback is that with the group that we were just part of in our other full-time job, is the fact is that you look across the bow, they had debt. They had issues. UFC does not have issues. They don't have any debt for what I can see. Or at least that's not present. So I don't believe they're going to be up for sale as a majority stake. What I do believe is that much like they did in 2010 with the Flash Entertainment Group from Abu Dhabi, was allowed them to buy a stake in the UFC. That's what I believe will happen. So are they for sale? No. But are they going to sell a portion of it?
I think so.
Yes. That's where I believe we need to be with this. That's where I believe they're going with this. I've seen it on our Facebook with our boys from Fightbook MMA. And MMA Wreckage. One comment I had was that everybody gets lost in the shuffle, and they forget about that aspect that I just mentioned. But what I also mentioned was that you look across the drawing board and you see everything being played out. Here's where I see is what was the issue with the UFC getting into NYC?
It was all about whether or not they could actually get everybody to back the UFC.
No, the issue was the Fertittas.
Right, because of their casino. But that's part of the issue that they're having right now is that Lorenzo Fertitta doesn't want to be in the UFC business. Let's just call it what it is. He doesn't want to be in the business because he wants to run the casinos. That's where his bloodline is. That's where his passion is. He was involved in the UFC and in mixed martial arts for the sole purpose that he had the money. He had the backing. So he allowed his best friend in Dana White to sucker him into buying the UFC, and that's where we're at today. The Fertittas had no idea about how much blood, sweat, and tears it would be to get to the UFC where it is. It was never their intent to be in the UFC business, let alone mixed martial arts business, this long. So now somebody's knocking on the door, somebody's calling them, and yes, they're going to pick up that phone. They are going to listen to every single person that's calling them, regardless if it's a full stake of the UFC or a partial stake in the UFC or 10% of the UFC. They are going to strongly listen because the Fertittas do not want to be in this business anymore. And that's where I disagree with you. They're in this business because they want to be in this business. They bought the UFC for $2 million because they wanted to be in this business. But it runs its course.
Yes and no. I think
for some people, they want to be here. Some people, they want to be here. I think that Fertittas have always been casino people, period. That's where they want to kind of navigate back to. And I believe that's where we're going, is that you're going to start hearing it. You're going to start seeing people, and it's going to go that way. But Fertittas no longer have that kind of that feeling that mixed martial arts is where it needs to be. You see, and I think we need new, fresh blood to kind of bleed that, kind of get that life back in order. I kind of see where you're going with it, but again, I still disagree. I believe that when you look at it, the Fertittas are in this for the long haul. They're the ones that have a majority of the stake. I believe it when Dana White says that he doesn't believe that the UFC is going to be up for sale right now. I believe him in that sense because he's only got 9% share. Why would you want to sell? So where's all this rumblings coming from? Right.
The Fertittas. That's where I agree with you from. So at the end of the day, Fertittas are going to still stay with majority stake in the UFC. But what this allows them to do is to get out of the limelight a little bit, get back underneath the radar, while still having majority stake in it. Because who's the mouthpiece of the UFC? Dana White. They're the guys behind the scene. But at the same time, they're getting majority of the flack through everything. So go back underneath the radar. Go buy the palms. Go do whatever you want to do. Get back underneath the radar. Because at the end of the day, whoever comes in is going to allow the growth and evolution of the UFC far better. But also, you're not going to sell a full part of this company, Tristan, if you still have that Reebok deal. Will there be a loophole in there maybe to get out of the Reebok deal? Maybe. But this could be the best thing for MMA, period, is to transition away from the conglomerate of UFC that's had this stronghold on MMA for so long.
Ain't that the truth?
This is going to go ahead and just slowly start to deteriorate, and it's going to allow everybody to compete on a much more even playing field. And you're going to allow the fighters to say, you know what? I want to be in the UFC. They're going to want to be in Bellator. You're not going to see people more likely to jump ship. You're going to see more people likely to stay with the UFC. We're not going to hear as much talk. that's probably the only negative thing to the UFC being bought a little bit out by another company. But outside of that, it's a win-win all across the board for the fighters, for the fans, whatever it may be. It's a win-win. It's not a lose-lose situation. I just don't see how this is bad on any platform. I just don't see it. It's a smart business move and a smart play by the Fertitta brothers in this situation.
See, at any point in time, you get the rumors that swirl about the UFC or swirl around the UFC. Every single person is going to jump on it. Dana White, Sean, Dana White said that everybody, there are no insiders. There are nobody that knows about mixed martial arts. I beg to differ. He says that everybody is only going after the simple play of, oh, we need to get clicks. Dude, there's plenty of those sites that are out there that want those clicks, right?
Yeah.
He has alienated so many people and pushed so many media people away because of people actually standing up and voicing their opinion. That for him to, again, push blame onto everybody else and deflect, doesn't that also tell you that there's some hidden underlining truth to what is going on in this in all of these rumors? There has to be that underlining truth, Sean. And I think in the coming months, I'm not even going to say it's going to be years now, because for a little over 3 years we've heard about this. I think now we're coming down to just sheer months. Because just like in our everyday job, regardless of if you believe it or not, sometimes you're so naive and delusional to think that it's not possible that it could happen to you, and it does. And I think that this is the same thing that's happening right now with the UFC, is that they continue to deflect, continue to shift, and say and turn everybody, like bringing this false facade.
Yeah, the curtain over everybody's eyes.
Yes.
Thinking that it's not going to happen. But again, in business, that is your job. Your job is to spin, to tell a story, to get people off the smell.
It's like a drug dog sniffing out for cocaine. You're going to find it. And it was in the back seat with Bones Jones. So if a dog can sniff it, dog can find it. Call BS. I'm calling it the way I see it. And it's going to happen sooner than later.
And here's,
might not be a full sell.
Tristan, and here's the thing, okay? After that and everything else that happened, you also got to look, too, is that he called out ESPN columnist Darren Rovell on this topic. Because he was one of the people that originally went ahead and announced it to the world. Dana White was the one that attacked him. He went right back at Dana White and said, when you hire an investment bank to give your give out your financials, it's hard to say you're not up for sale. If you volunteer your financials, you're up for sale.
But that's what we said a while back ago, remember? We were the only ones that were on this trail, folks. We were the only ones that could smell this a mile away. We told everybody when we pulled back the curtain.
I wouldn't say we were the only ones.
Well, we were one of the only ones that pulled back the curtain with the UFC's financials.
Tristan, but we do that all the time with our boys from Fightbook, our guys from MMA Madhouse.
It's different when we're behind closed doors and we're not telling the world about everything that we know.
But I guess now is the time that us three guys need to just maybe pull our little side conversations out there and put it out there for everybody and say, here's what we do know.
Dude, we do it with Fightbook MMA. We do it with Skippy Cohen. We do it with Steve Reichel. We have our own little group of people and stuff like that we talk to on a daily basis. And we have been one of the ones that have been very vocal about the financials, about the UFC. We saw the financials when we opened up the books and we saw the financials. And when you're in debt as much as they are, or the creditors are coming and knocking on your door, and the creditors say that you owe X, Y, and Z, the next course of action is ultimately bankruptcy. And the way that, and how fast they were losing money at a rapid trend due to fighters pulling out, due to injuries, it started increasing. And when it starts increasing in financials, you get hit with a fine after fine. And the only thing you can hope for is that you can make bank at one point. And that's what the UFC has tried to do. Right now, with UFC 200, is that, what did we tell you? It was going to come down to that there was going to be one big play. One big play, remember? And that big play was they were going to put all their eggs in one basket and cross their fingers and hope for the best. They were going to take all their poker chips from Las Vegas, sit at a poker table, take all the chips and slide them and go, we're all in. That's UFC 200. Because they have to. Everybody's like, oh, my God, they're putting on a great show. Dude, they had no other alternative. None. If you look at the financial standpoint, it is worse than what is being perceived to the public and to the fans. Only Dana White and company can ultimately change this. Change this course of direction. They can. Nobody else can. So what do you do at this point in time, Sean? Something has to give. And I think at this point, we're going to see sooner rather than later that it's going to come down to the wire. Somebody is going to get paper. Believe that. But Sean, for the first time, UFC goes to the Netherlands. And they put everything out on the table by bringing over people that were home. And you get Alistair Overeem, that headline a card. And then all of a sudden, you get a whole bunch of other people. And this was by far a halfway decent card. You're listening to the DuCross Brothers Sports Warriors right here on YouTube, on YouTube TV, on YouTube.com. And we're also on Blog Talk Radio. Sit tight. We'll be right back.
Excelsior, Imperius Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are the DuCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors, right here on YouTube.com. You can find us, the Hotspot Show, live. We are on there. We are the Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan DuCross. This is my brother, Sean DuCross. As you can clearly see, the DuCross Brothers.
And also back. a fan of the Expo.
Right? This is what we classified as the Bounce Back Show. For the simple fact is that you got UFC Fight Night 87 in Rotterdam. You got UFC 198 preview with your boys. Bellator preview with your boys. Canelo and Khan, are you kidding me? And then we got so much more right here on an impactful show for our fans. Just love this sport so much that we got to give it back. Opinions on real topics, real talk with your boys. Sean, UFC Fight Night in Rotterdam. First time ever UFC goes to the Netherlands. And it was headlined by two friends, former mates, if you will. and one was being mentored by the top two coaches at American Top Team. And that was Andre Arlovsky. And people put Aleister Overeem on the back burner. Huh. Ironic, really? Once again, Pitbull, Andre Arlovsky, Sean, once again, he gets this carrot that is dangled right in front of him. And everybody is thinking, Andre Arlovsky, this guy. Here he goes. He's going to get another title shot. He's going to finally get a title shot. He's going to finally put everything out there and attack.
And he did attack.
But last time he did that, he lost.
But he attacked.
Then he comes back again with another opportunity. And he lost.
Here's the thing. What did I say a couple weeks ago about Frank Mir when Frank Mir came up? Fightful. Probably is always going to remember the verbiage I used about what I noticed with Frank Mir. I noticed the same thing with Andre Arlovsky, and Andre Arlovsky was DOA before he ever got officially into the octagon. This whole entire notion of you figuring out how people win and lose lately is ridiculous. Because, what, missed his little extra ab workout. He missed it. He had a little bit more jelly rolls around the love handle area. He looked very eerie, similar to what Frank Mir. What happened to Frank Mir?
Lost.
Andre Arlovsky goes out and wins when he's got a little bit more ab definition going on.
But this is the second time Andre Arlovsky lost via TKO when he's on the verge, on the cusp of taking that next step to get to a title shot.
Just like Frank Mir. When Frank Mir's on that next level, Jen, nobody beats Frank Mir. But when Frank Mir gets complacent and he doesn't come into the best shape, he gets beat. When Andre Arlovsky comes in on that next level, but then the next fight he comes in looking a little fluffy, perhaps his worst shape of the fight in one of his bigger fights. Now where does Andre Arlovsky go? We all know where Aleister Overeem goes. For a guy that's been a classified PED user and a guy that kills his own training partners, goes ahead and gets another title shot opportunity against the winner of Verdum and Steel Miocic. He gets another opportunity. But that's a whole different discussion. That gets you on a whole other level for a different topic, for probably a different show that we'll probably bring it in here at some point. But for you to get beat with a crane kick that gets you up underneath the chin and then gets the left hook to the dome, and you go just like that, you walk in there, and you're Stefan Struve, and it's like, guess what? I'm 7 feet tall, and you can't teach that. How you doing? But I got one word to spell out for you. S-A-F-T. Soft. And that's what Bigfoot Silva is, you know? Sorry, Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, we just had to do that because it fits. But you look at that, and Bigfoot has become soft. When you are 1-5 since 2013, and you got dropped with a knee and an elbow, your chin isn't what it used to be. But I remember him taking beatings and still coming after you.
But are we really talking about Stefan Struve's performance against Bigfoot Silva as some kind of
vision? You got to be opportunistic. If you're that, you're going to be looking at the top. Aleister Overeem is a prime example of being at the right place at the right time, beating the right people at the right time. The biggest question that still comes up is, how does a guy who's a glorified PED user continue to get opportunity after opportunity at a title shot? Because opportunities come once in a lifetime.
Same for the moment.
Right?
Aleister Overeem, despite his PED use, despite his performance-enhancing drugs, he is still a freak among boys in the heavyweight division. If you can put it all together, he can straight whoop on anybody and everybody and say that he is a heavyweight contender. Look, he he's already beaten Verdum and tied Verdum. So there is nobody left in the weak heavyweight division but Alistair Overeem. Does people not understand that when you're looking at the heavyweight division, you have literally no choice but to have Alistair Overeem at the top? None. Nobody in the world in the UFC that can fight for that. You can jump across the bow and go, hey, let's go get Lorenzo Hood for WSOF, save his career, put him in the UFC, and watch him dismantle a couple people. You know? That's the
But that goes to show how weak the heavyweight division is in the UFC, is that you could take our boy Enzo and move him into any one of those platforms in the heavyweight division, in WSOF or the UFC, and he immediately becomes a top five contender. He immediately becomes one of the better ones, because you look at the list of heavyweights, there's just nobody there that's appealing.
Verdum, Miocic.
When was the last time you saw the title? And we'll touch on this too when we preview UFC 198.
Absolutely.
But I'll say it here now. The last time we saw the heavyweight title, 2013. Okay, that's good to know. Like, that's how irrelevant the heavyweight division is.
What's irrelevant is the big bad Russian in Bellator that hasn't defended his title in 5 years in Bellator.
It must be a heavyweight thing. It must be a heavyweight.
The heavyweight division is so weak. It's so thinned out. It's ridiculous. It's not just a far cry in the UFC, but Bellator, WSOF, you name it. That cry is so loud that it's almost like a rally cry right now. That's why you saw WSOF go out of the way and sign multiple heavyweights and decided to have a heavyweight tournament. Because every single heavyweight division, it is so thin. It is so depleted.
I will propose a question to the fans out there, to the TikTok Warriors out there.
TikTok Warriors! Come out and play!
Is that, why is it that all heavyweight titles, Bellator, WSOF, UFC, boxing, why is it that the heavyweight title is the least defended on all combat platforms? How is it the least defended title? Is that how depleted the talent roster is for heavyweights? Do we need to fluff up more lightweights, more middleweights?
Right.
More welterweights? Is that what we need to do? Fluff them up? Give them some cinnamon rolls and make it good for them? Like, it doesn't make any sense why this title or any heavyweight title is that poorly defended. And it boggles my mind. So that's the question I propose to the TikTok Warriors. Hit us up on Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross, Ducross Bros fan page, right here in the chat room, on YouTube, wherever. Go ahead, let us know why these titles are the least defended, because it boggles my mind. So that happened UFC Fight Night 87. You also have got UFC 198 coming up. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break and then get right back into it.
Excelsior and Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DeCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DeCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
What's up, everybody? We are back. You're listening live right now to the DeCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors, where we have real topics with real opinions. Right here, we are on YouTube.com. You search the Sports Warriors. We are live on YouTube. We are live on Blog Talk. Dude, you guys are the reason why I'm doing this. And we are here to give you different opinions and different views of the MMA world. UFC 198 preview, Sean, is right around the corner. We talked about the man they call Fabricio Werdum, the heavyweight champion of the world in the UFC. But what is unique to this topic alone is the fact that he has had one fight in 2015, no fights in 2016.
And see, and Fight posted to answer the question that I proposed to everybody was that you look at it and you talk about, well, why is it that the heavyweights get hurt? They get hurt often. And it's like, I see that. But when you look at it and you're talking about the fighters being hurt and whatnot, is that you've got to be able to take care of yourself then. And not get hurt. It's like you should know that as a heavyweight, you're more likely to get hurt. So protect yourself. Train a little bit. Don't go as hard as often. So at the end of the day, I could see that being an issue. I agree with Fightbook in that they do get hurt easy. And then I just said the other part of it was that there's just the talent pool is just not there. And at the end of the day, you've got to find the talent pool. You've got to find a way to get more fighters at the top of the food chain instead of regurgitating the same top five over and over and over again. So when you get a chance to sign quality heavyweights, sign quality heavyweights. Make them fight. There isn't a reason why these guys shouldn't fight when they get signed when your division is so weak to begin with. Fightbook, he knows where I'm probably going with this for having the same buddy in ours in Zoe. He's heard all of our interviews with him. He knows where that's going. I'll just leave that there. If Zoe gets wind of this, he knows where I'm going with it. But I'll leave that for another topic for another day. But you look back and you look at this. 2013, Werdum's pulled out two fights. Because he's been injured? Like, come on. You have to see what's going on. And Werdum is one of the premier heavyweights in all of MMA. It dates all the way back to the Strikeforce era, Tristan, when we met the guy. And you straight up told the guy he was going to be a world champion. What did he do the next time? Went out there and took the title. It's going to be very hard for Stipe Miocic to take that title from him, when you look at Stipe Miocic, is that he's a stand-up brawler.
But he's a wrestler. He has a wrestling background. So it's interesting when you put two guys like Fabricio Werdum, like Miocic, inside the octagon, one-on-one. You got a wrestler and a stand-up guy. What's been the most impressive thing for Werdum is that one of our words is always that evolution. How can you make yourself better? Werdum never really had this mantra of being this tough guy, being this guy where he was going to be able to push you to the limit, beat you standing up, but his stand-up has gotten so much better. And that's what you look for in this fight, is that you're going to have one guy like Miocic, that's probably going to attempt to try to take down, take Fabricio Verdum down. But I don't see this being a ground him out, drag him out fight that at some point these guys are going to just want to bang. And that's the interesting thing about this fight is that you've got a grappler versus striker.
Right.
You've got to think that if Stipe Miocic has any opportunity at winning this fight, he cannot be afraid to get the fight to the ground. Because if he does, Verdum will beat him. Because he needs to get the fight away from the striking ability from Verdum. Verdum is very good off his back, don't get me wrong. But I think Stipe Miocic has to get this fight to the ground. Because he's got to avoid the kicks from Verdum in this fight. If he does not do so, I think Verdum controls the pace, controls where the fight is going to take place. When you look at it, that's the way I see this fight happening.
I just don't like the fact that here you have Fabricio Verdum that fought twice in 2014, once in 2015. Miocic hasn't even fought since Andre Arlovsky's finish. I'm sitting here trying to figure out that, okay, we have a guy that hasn't fought in a while. What type of shape, what type of fighter is Fabricio Verdum coming in as? Because even with only one fight in 2016 for Miocic, I think that he has a slight little edge over the champion in that retrospect of actually being active than being inactive than what we actually have right now in the heavyweight division. So, and the only thing that I'm looking and I'm trying to figure out how stylistically this matchup's going to have, because like I said, I see this as a stand-up kind of performance. And I think that if I'm Fabricio, because I haven't been off for I've been off for a hell of a long time, that I think that this is where you see Fabricio just go to legs. I think the leg kicks is what's ultimately going to spell the doom of Miocic.
And that's where I kind of see it, is that if he stays striking, even though that Stipe Miocic is the striker of the two, it benefits a more well-rounded guy in Verdum. This whole fight just benefits him.
Ain't nobody going to get knocked out, though.
It's hard to defeat. Oh, I believe this fight ends with a knockout from Fabricio. Yes, it ends with a knockout in the second round.
Yo, you have a fever?
You know me, bold predictions. That's my thing. I love to make statements. I'm not afraid of it. So I believe this goes down the wrong path for Stipe Miocic. He's not ready yet. He thinks he is, but he's ultimately not. He reminds me of another guy that's on the card. Matt Brown, taking on Divi Maia. Hashtag, uh-oh. Can we just call this hashtag the steroid card? Because look, Sean, Vitor Belfort, Cyborg Santos, Damian Maia, Lineker, was supposed to be Anderson Silva. Did you all notice that these guys were all on the juice at one point? And notice they're all from Brazil. Brazil! So there's a lot going on this card and a lot of stuff. And when you look at Matt Brown versus Damian Maia, that was as confusing of a matchup as Anderson Silva versus Uriah Hall. Those two fights were confusing. Matt Brown took basically the Damian Maia fight as if to say, hello, I'm Matt Brown. I'm not afraid to fight. Then in the back of your head, like, what did I get myself into? Damian Maia is not a good stand-up striker. However, what Damian Maia does do really well is submit people, take the fight to the ground. How good is Matt Brown with defending takedowns? That's going to be the biggest question going into this fight, because this could be one of two things: the smartest thing Matt Brown ever did, or the dumbest thing Matt Brown ever did. I personally want to see Matt Brown win because he's an extremely underdog for this fight, because of the stylistic matchups being so far off. See, you want to talk about a complete mismatch or the polar opposite, let's talk about Yakari Souza versus Vitor Belfort. You got Yakari Souza that is coming off a loss to this steroid juiced up Yoel Romero. This card from top to bottom, I'm thinking like, dude, did they not look at who the fights were? That outside of Brazil, you're just like, dude, yep, he's going to fight because he's from Brazil. Yep, he's going to fight because he's from Brazil. Nothing makes sense about this card. The middleweight division is so depleted right now of guys that are at the top of their game that are they're literally trying to fight and reestablish themselves. They don't trust anybody that's inside that division. It's kind of disappointing. You look at Yakari Souza, who has only lost one fight since 2012, dude. And the only loss came was to a juiced up freak. And Sharky's playing with the cat, so don't worry about it. Vitor has fought Dan Henderson twice and won both times. So where does that put Vitor Belfort in this talk? You know, this is completely two polar opposites of what we're talking about in terms of the division that has Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold fighting for position.
You know, just because you said I was playing with her cat, Dante right here, he's black. So when you look at it, black cats are generally bad luck. What's to say that at the end of the day, that when UFC 198 comes out, that you don't see at least two people get popped for something with performance-enhancing drugs?
Well, I can guarantee you one of them is going to be Vitor Belfort.
I think our cat Dante is an omen of what's going to happen at UFC 198. That's why he's in the show today. He had to make it perfectly clear UFC 198 is headed down a disaster coming up this weekend. And when you look at it, that's the way I see it going down. It's going to be an interesting card from top to bottom.
But, dude, don't forget, I want to talk about, before we go into another break here, is I want to talk about John Lineker versus Rob Font. I think that's the fight to watch, is because Font has only lost one time. It's known for its highlight finishes. But this is going to be a straight-out stand-and-bang slugfest. And I believe that's going to steal the show, that if anything's going to make up for a lackluster card and a snooze fest between Fabricio Werdum and Miocic, that's going to be the one fight everybody's just going to be like, oh, thank goodness for those two.
What about Cyborg? Leslie Smith saying, I'm going to destroy her. I'll be the woman to be known as, I'm the one that destroyed her.
What?
Yeah, clearly.
What are we doing? Is this good for women's MMA?
It is, because it still gets people to talk. So right. Because I solely believe that this does nothing for women's MMA. This is absolutely pointless. Outside of making money in Brazil.
Like, this is the UFC's equivalent to the UFC 200 that this is UFC 198's Brazil's 200.
Yeah.
That's what this is Brazil's 200 compared to America's 200. That's what this is.
So then you should have made a UFC 199 and not UFC 198. But Tristan, we're not going to go into another break. We're just going to keep on rolling here as we get ready to head out. But much like what is going on here this past week, what's going on this weekend, we also can't forget that you had Canelo Alvarez versus Amir Khan that went down. This was supposed to be a little bit at the beginning of the show. Kind of got pushed all the way to the back because of MMA and the UFC, what's going on this past weekend. But you look at Amir Khan versus Canelo. That fight went down like Fight Book said it was going to do just around later. When I was watching that fight, Amir Khan was doing everything he possibly could in that fight.
Was destroying Canelo Alvarez.
He was doing what caused Canelo to lose his fight against Floyd Mayweather. A boxer being precise, calculated, and just being quick on his feet. He was popping off 1-2 combos left and right. He was using his jab. He was messing up the face a little bit of Canelo. And you're sitting back going, See, this is why Canelo can never go any further than what he was. See, but then you see him knock out Amir Khan. So funny how everybody's talking about how great Canelo was in that fight. Did you guys lose some brain cells in that? Because he was getting whooped on by Amir Khan. But let's I posted it on my Facebook. If you search Tristan Ducross or the Ducross brothers, you'll see it. The video showed exactly what I've been trying to get people to see. Is that Amir Khan weighs in at 147 pounds. Alvarez came into the fight at 180 pounds. That is a 40-pound weight differential, folks. And I always say, and I use the word loosely, is that these middleweights in boxing are considered, in my eyes, fake middleweights. Because you weigh in at one weight, but you know damn well you ain't weighing that weight coming in. Especially if you're a bigger guy, normally at a walk-around weight, you know you ain't walking in that ring at 147 pounds. But Amir Khan will always walk around at 147. Canelo walked in at 180. That's a complete mismatch. He's like, I told you during the fight, I was like, dude, all he has to do is drop his hand one time and he gets caught with a Canelo punch. It's over. And what happened? He went to the body of Canelo, worked on that body, slowed it down to the point where he was here, did a subtle little drop with his shoulder, and just that was it. Khan dropped his guard and got caught. That's all she wrote. But that's the problem that we have in boxing, is that when does weight classes actually matter? And that's the biggest thing here. It's like, one thing I will disagree with you on before I go into the weight classes is the fact is that when you look at Canelo, okay, you said that did people lose their brain cells because Canelo isn't as good as what people say he is. You're wrong. He is as good as people say he is.
Is he as good as people advertise him as?
Absolutely. This was that fight. Because if he was able to adjust and to adapt like he did against Amir Khan, he would have beat Floyd Mayweather. But back then, a 20-year-old guy wasn't evolving. When he realized he was getting pummeled by Amir Khan, what did he do?
Look for that one punch.
No. He started to go even more for the body more often to slow him down, to benefit him, to benefit the power. A couple years ago, he wouldn't have even done that against Floyd.
Wouldn't have done body work.
He went directly at Floyd to lay the haymaker. And this one, he's like, dude, I'm getting beat up here. What am I supposed to do?
I got to slow this guy down.
I got to figure out how to slow him down. What's the best way to slow down a quick puncher?
Always to the body.
He ultimately went right to the body over and over again. And you started to see that wore him down. Because then, like you said, it ultimately ended up that one dip in his shoulder, that one shot coming over the top.
I thought that was very masterful because you didn't even see it until I paused it and pointed out to you that it was just a subtle dip in the shoulder, drop the hands right over the top.
Yeah, so when you look at that, that's where Canelo has grown.
Yep.
I
can see that.
It's uncanny that he's 25 years old and the guy is 47-1 in one. 33 knockouts at the age of 25. The lineal middleweight champion.
But now we get a Triple G fight against Canelo Alvarez. And if anybody paid any attention to Triple G's last pay-per-view fight, there was no money to be made.
Nope.
The lowest pay-per-view buys in the history of boxing. And you're going to have a headliner with Triple G again. I don't think Canelo alone can carry this. So yeah. I'm going to look at Golden Boy Promotions once again to go out of their way and bring a guy like David Lemieux back onto a card.
That would be smart for them. Canelo's getting to the point
where he could sell a little bit.
He can sell a little bit. This was his first official I'm Canelo Alvarez. This is my fight card. This is my pay-per-view. He's getting to that point.
I can see that.
People are getting to the point that Triple G, they know who Gennady Golovkin is. Can he sell? No. Teddy Atlas said it the best. This does nothing to benefit Canelo Alvarez. No matter how good Gennady Golovkin is,
there is no money to be made.
There is no money to be made here. So you're going to have to look at Canelo Alvarez and Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy Promotions as a way to figure out how to make Gennady Golovkin a household name that he was not against David Lemieux.
And trying to make him some kind of profitable amenity right now, because boxing is a fickle world when you look at it, because if there's no money to be made, there's really no option for any boxer to take a fight.
Granted, Canelo says that, hey, I'm going to fight Triple G.
Correct.
And I applaud that because he's a guy, he's one of the very few in the boxing world or in combat sports in general that is not afraid of taking a fight. Doesn't care who you are, where you're from, what you're about.
But he is afraid to take a fight.
I'm hoping he turned over a new leaf because he is afraid to take a fight.
Okay? Who?
Canelo. He's afraid to take a
who
fight.
Who did he turn down?
It's Tristan, he fights. It's not about who he turns down. It's about the fact that the guy doesn't fight at middleweight. He fights at a catchweight.
Right.
Like Gennady Golovkin and his trainer said, fight at 160. We have enough weight divisions. We don't need a 155. That doesn't even exist. Fight at 160. That's where this needs to take place.
It's like, why do you need three middleweight divisions? 145, 155, 160.
But 155 is not a division.
Right, but I'm just saying that, like, why do we have to keep steering people around? Just, hey, this is middleweight. This is what you're fighting at.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Middleweight is 160, not 155.
Or 145.
According to reports, is that Canelo Alvarez kills himself to make it to 155. Why? Because you're afraid to face somebody that by game time,
you're going to be bigger than.
Or the fact is that, so Gennady Golovkin is going to come in at 160. You're going to come in at 160. You're going to come in at 180. And a guy across the bow is going to be 180 just like you. You're afraid. You go down to 155 knowing that the guy you're going to fight by game time is not going to be near your weight. So whether he's saying he's not afraid, let's dig deeper. He is slightly afraid.
Sean, psychoanalyzing Canelo Alvarez.
Fight Gennady Golovkin at 160. See who the bigger man is. Let's see if you're really not afraid. Let's see if it's just bark right now. Because in 15 days, May 24th, we will know if this fight is going down or if the lineal middleweight champion will be awarded to none other than Gennady Golovkin. Because by rule,
he has 15 days
to announce the fight against Gennady Golovkin. Is he afraid? He says he's not.
He says he can take the fight.
He says he's ready. Let's see how ready him and Oscar De La Hoya is. The only thing that Gennady Golovkin is asking for, fight him at 160. Doesn't care about the money. Doesn't care about where. Just cares about the fact that it's at 160 because he doesn't want Canelo to come in weighing more than him.
See, that's smart. I wish Amir Khan would have done that.
Amir Khan's going to do is go back down the welterweight, fight Danny Garcia after he just lost his title opportunity against Canelo. Drops down in weight. The opponent is Danny Garcia for the title.
Why not?
So it's like,
and then he'll go right back up and say, I want to face Canelo Alvarez or I want to face Triple G again. Boxing is like a roller coaster ride, ain't it?
It's a fickle world. It really is.
But, Sean, we are going to head on out of here soon. But we got Bellator MMA coming up right around the corner that is headlined by two light heavyweights. in Phil Wonderful Davis versus Kimo Lawal.
When you're looking at that fight, Bellator 154, Kimo versus Phil Davis, who would have thought that you'd be talking about those two guys headlining a MMA card, considering that Phil Davis was classified as Mr. Lackluster, Mr. No Emotion, Mr. Boring.
Yet in two fights at Bellator, he has two finishes.
Right.
And one was a Kimura over the former light heavyweight champion. That was Emmanuel Newton.
Like, yo, dude, you're talking about Phil Mr. Wonderful Davis. And you're looking at the terminology we use on a daily basis, evolution. When you come in and you dominate and finish two fights in a round robin, that's evolving. But then you look across the bow and you look at Kimo. Kimo continues to evolve and change the game as we know it.
See, you are pitting literally two of the same people against each other.
Just one in Kimo goes ahead and offers more striking prowess.
I was just going
to
say that.
Than Phil Davis.
Stand-up edge goes to Kimo. Wrestling edge goes to Phil Davis. But you talk about evolving. How much does Phil Davis, after those two finishes in that tournament, push him up the ladder to reinventing himself in Bellator? What will the MMA world do? What will Bellator MMA Nation do if at the end of the day, Kimo gets submitted by Phil Davis?
Right?
What happens if he gets knocked out by Phil Davis? Like, the MMA world will be flipped literally upside down on top of their head in the light heavyweight division by Mr. Wonderful Davis.
Like, whoa. What, the possibilities could so much alter the game. Either it can go left or it can go right. It could go so many different avenues. And what's next? And what's the next plan of attack?
When you look at Kimo Lawal and you look at Phil Davis, they have been on a collision course for the last 2 years. Behind the scenes, these two have been talking nonstop about each other. The light heavyweight tournament happened and Mo is injured. They still were not done talking. This rivalry has continued to grow and manifest into something that is so much bigger than what people actually realize just outside of what you see.
Makes for good TV?
Absolutely. See Spike TV ratings on the Mo and Phil Davis blew the roof off the ratings for their little behind the scenes. But that's what's interesting is that you get to this. But then you also have the return of the big old bad Russian. And Sergey Konstantinov versus Josh Applett. Okay. We just talked about the heavyweight division being irrelevant. Let alone a title being irrelevant. There's nothing left for Bellator's heavyweight division because that title hasn't been defended in the last 5 years. Sergey has literally traveled all over the world winning titles, defending titles. And yet he has still held the title hostage. And now he faces a guy named Josh Applett, who's 3-0, who's 3-1 in Bellator. And again, he has done nothing to put himself into this spot. But hey, because of the thin division, you get boosted up. I think you have also Cyborg Santos, the male version.
Yes.
Evangelista Santos versus Sayadawad.
This could go one of many different ways. Either Sayadawad is going
to
get
knocked up and wait to 170.
Either A, he's going to get knocked out, or he's going to knock out Cyborg. One of those two scenarios is going to happen.
But Santos has gone from having no fights in the last 2 years to three fights in 2016, and one is in 3 weeks. Is 3 weeks from his last fight. Like, who does he think he is? Cowboy Cerrone?
Hey, money talks.
Dude, I want to fight.
Money talks. I'll go fight every day. Hey, as long as I'm healthy and bones are not broken, I'll go fight.
But
does he not understand, Sayada Wad, that you are stepping up into a lightweight division where that division is heavily loaded? And Santos is in the upper echelon of the lightweight division.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. Based off his credentials, where he's come from, where Sayada Wad, dude, he has never been in the lightweight division.
He's not in my top 15. He's not in my top 15. He's not in. He's not even in the upper echelon discussion in, when I'm talking light heavyweight. When we break down the light heavyweight division in Bellator, he's not even in that discussion. Sayada Wad was at one point in the...
You mean lightweight division.
Correct, in the lightweight division. Sayada Wad was somebody that you were talking about in the division below. Why would you go up? Why would you go up?
He breaks his hand and thinks he can go up.
That's where I'm confused. Maybe it's because of the whole weigh-in regimen now that he's supposed to be in 170. I mean, we can go ahead and try to hit up Sayada Wad again and find out why he wanted to make the jump to 170 and give a better, clear indication to the fight fans about why he made that jump.
Right.
But I don't think that's a good jump for him unless he knocks out Cyborg Santos and convincingly justifies that I'm here to make a new home, then he very well may prove us wrong.
Right.
But that's my only drawback with Sayada Wad. And I guess name-wise, Cyborg has a little bit of a name. People knows who he is. But in terms of level, he's not even in my top 15. I just don't see how it benefits him unless it's because it's his walking-in party into the lightweight division.
But we'll see this weekend. We'll see. But we are the New Cross Brothers Sports Warriors. You can find us on www.thehotspotshow.com. Find us on Facebook, the New Cross Brothers. You can also find us with Sean and Tristan New Cross. Hit us up on Twitter at the New Cross Bros. In the meantime, until next time, we are out of here. Catch you on down the road.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.